Now let's go on to the prophet Jeremiah, chapter 5, verses 23 and 24. Jeremiah is rebuking the people of his day in Israel because they were not aware of what God was doing. They were wrapped up in themselves and their own carnal concerns, and they were blind and deaf to what God was saying and doing. And this is what Jeremiah says in chapter 5, verse 23 and following. This people, that's Israel, in the time of Jeremiah, has a defiant and rebellious heart. They have revolted and departed from God. Now watch the evidence, the next verse. They do not say in their heart, let us now fear the Lord our God, who gives rain, both the former and the latter, in its season. He reserves for us the appointed weeks of the harvest. Notice, the rain is given for the sake of what? The harvest, that's right. What was the mistake that Israel made? They didn't realize that they were totally dependent on God for the rain, and that the rain was given for the sake of the harvest. They missed God's purpose. And it says there, God reserves the appointed weeks of the harvest. That became a startling revelation to me some years ago. Actually, I had walked into a restaurant a little earlier and selected a table that I wanted to sit at. But when I went over to sit at the table, there was a little sign on the table that showed me I couldn't sit there. Guess what it was? Reserved. And when I read this passage, I thought, that's it. God has put a little sign over just a few short weeks in which the harvest has to be gathered in. He's reserved them. He said to Satan, you can't have those weeks. I've set them apart for the harvest. Not months, but weeks. Those of you who are farmers or work on the land, and have crops, not so much livestock, you will realize and agree with me that what's the critical season of the year? What's the busiest season of the year? What's the season when everybody has to be out? The harvest, that's right. And in Proverbs chapter 10, verse 5, well, I better read it. It comes better that way. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 5. He who gathers in summer is a wise son, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame. Because at the season when everybody's needed to be alert and active, there he is sleeping. And he causes his father shame. His father's ashamed of him. Do you think there are sons in the church that are causing their father shame? Because in the harvest hour, they're sleeping. Sleeping on a church pew, sitting there, listening to the sermons, singing the hymns, and totally unaware of the harvest that has to be reaped. Could it be that one or two of you are in that category? You remember what I said about the selfishness? Here's another aspect of it. Just wrapped up in your own spiritual good, excited about your spiritual gifts, able to talk spiritual language, but asleep when the harvest needs to be reaped. And then we go on to Joel chapter 2. And we see in this prophecy of Joel the spiritual counterpart of the natural harvest. And we can't deal with the whole theme of Joel, but Joel really has three major sections corresponding to the three chapters. Section 1, desolation. Section 2, restoration. Section 3, judgment. And here in chapter 2, we come to the restoration. And the agent of restoration is the rain, which is a picture of the Holy Spirit. And Joel says in chapter 2, verse 23, "Be glad then, you children of Zion, and rejoice in the Lord your God, for he has given you the former rain faithfully." It fell on the early church. "And he will cause the rain to come down for you, the former rain and the latter rain in the first month," the Passover month, March or April. And notice the purpose of the rain. "The threshing floors shall be full of wheat, and the vats shall overflow with new wine and oil." What are the three main crops? The wheat, the wine, and the oil. What brings them forth? The latter rain. What is the spiritual counterpart of the latter rain? We go on to Joel chapter 2, verse 28. "And it shall come to pass afterward." And those of you that were here yesterday, we dealt with what it was after. And you remember it was after God's people had got together and fasted and prayed and called upon him. "And it shall come to pass afterward that God says, I will pour out my spirit on all flesh." It's interesting, Peter quoted that verse on the day of Pentecost, and he said, "This is that which is spoken by the prophet Joel." But he didn't say afterward, he said in the latter days. But in that passage in Acts 2, if you study it carefully, God says, or Peter quotes him as saying, "I will pour out of my spirit, some of my spirit." But here he says, "I will pour out my spirit. I'll empty the bucket. I'll pour it all out." And he says, "on all flesh." As a good Pentecostal, when I first encountered the charismatic movement in the 1960s, I was shocked. I said to myself, "Anglicans, Presbyterians, Baptists, they don't have any right to the Holy Spirit. That's for us Pentecostals." But God gently reminded me that Anglicans and Baptists and Presbyterians and Plymouth Brethren all have flesh. And he said, "I'm going to pour it out on all flesh." And he proceeded to do it. He didn't consult me. He didn't ask my opinion. He just did it. But I want to point out to you, there's a lot of flesh that hasn't yet had the outpouring. Ruth was talking to you earlier about the Muslim world. Nearly 1 billion Muslims on earth. They're not quite 1 billion. And basically, there's just been a few drops. That's all. You know, statistics in the world today are interesting. Chinese are just over 1 billion people. In other words, one in every 5 persons on earth is Chinese. Did you know that? You can't talk about reaching the nations if you're not reaching the Chinese. And slightly smaller proportion on earth today is Muslim. What are we doing about them? Don't they have flesh? They're going to be visited. Because God said it. "I will pour out my spirit on all flesh." And then he talks about the supernatural manifestations leading up to the climax of the last days. Blood and fire and vapor of smoke in the great and terrible day of the Lord.